The headlines: Iran warns it will respond immediately to any move against it by the U.S. and its allies at the International Atomic Energy Agency. The Israeli Prime Minister steps up his rhetoric against Iran as the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency visits Israel. And also, official data show Turkey's inflation climbed to its highest level since 1998, hitting an annual 73.5% in May. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's foreign minister, says that his country will immediately, effectively, and proportionately respond to any political move against Tehran at the International Atomic Energy Agency. Hossein Amir Abdullahian censured the, quote, hasty and destructive move by the U.S. and the three European countries, namely Britain, France, and Germany, in compiling a draft resolution at the IAEA. He said such a behavior goes against diplomacy and will complicate the talks in Vienna to revive the 2015 deal between Iran and the world powers. Amir Abdullahian reiterated Iran's resolve to reach a good, strong, and lasting deal. He made the remarks in a phone call with the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. Amir Abdullahian also slammed the IAEA chief's visit to Israel. Out of a Board of Governors meeting on Iran, he said Grossi's visit contradicts the agency's impartiality and undermines its technical and professional status. Josep Borrell, for his part, censured what he called some attempts to undermine the Vienna talks. He urged all the parties involved to continue dialogue in order to change the current negative atmosphere pervading the IAEA. A top Iranian official has dismissed Israel's escalating military rhetoric against Iran, saying that Tel Aviv can only dream of attacking the country. Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Baghdadi Kani says if Israel does actually dream of such a venture, it will never awake from it. Israel says it will take action if the international community fails to stop Iran's nuclear program within, quote, the relevant time frame. The threat was issued during a visit to Israel by the International Atomic Energy Agency's chief, Rafael Grossi. The visit comes out of an IAEA Board of Governors meeting on Iran. The U.S., Britain, France, and Germany plan to present a resolution urging more cooperation from Tehran. Iran says its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes and has warned against any unconstructive action at the IAEA Board of Governors meeting.
The International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, is supposed to monitor compliance with the 1968 Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The NPT has been described as a centerpiece of global efforts to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons, promote cooperation in the peaceful uses of nuclear energy, and to achieve the goal of nuclear disarmament. The IAEA is supposed to have technical and professional cooperation with NPT signatories away from politics. The Atomic Agency has had a high-profile role regarding Iran's nuclear energy program. In 2015, when Iran and the P5+1 struck a deal known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the IAEA was tasked with monitoring Iran's compliance with the terms of the agreement. In many of its reports over the past years, the agency has said that it has found no evidence of any diversion in Iran's nuclear program. As the fate of the faltering 2015 deal remains increasingly unclear, the technical role and supposed independence of the atomic watchdog are being tested. In a recent report, the IAEA said Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium had grown to more than 18 times the limit allowed in the 2015 agreement. The agency also said Iran has failed to answer its remaining questions. Tehran described the IAEA's latest statements as one-sided, saying that it fails to reflect Iran's extensive cooperation with the agency.
The International Atomic Energy Agency seems to be succumbing to the same sort of takeover that the United States and the Anglo-Zionist Empire has been doing to so many other international organizations, such as, for example, in athletics, for example, in economics with the World Economic Forum, for example. All these organizations, they seem to want to control them.
Meanwhile, reports say Western countries lobbied by Israel are planning to push the International Atomic Energy Agency to criticize Iran at its upcoming meeting of the Board of Governors.
Iran has repeatedly warned that the IAEA's work must remain technical and away from politics this week. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian warned against any political interference in the technical affairs of the agency. He stressed the need for avoiding political approaches in the forthcoming Board of Governors meeting. This as Israel has stepped up its campaign to get the West on board to pile pressure on Iran.
Back in March, Rafael Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, visited Iran. The IAEA and Iran announced at the end of the visit that they had agreed on an approach for resolving remaining bilateral issues. The visit came as representatives from Iran and the P4+1 were trying to find a way to move forward in their negotiations aimed at reviving the 2015 deal. The talks are currently stalled, with Iran saying the United States is failing to make necessary political decisions. At this point, any stance by the Atomic Agency could have an important effect on the stalled talks. This week, Iran's top diplomat said Tehran and the agency's agreement in March was mutually satisfactory. He warned that political interference in the technical affairs of the agency is totally unconstructive. Amir Abdollahian's comments came ahead of a meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors scheduled for June the 6th. Days left to the meeting, the IAEA chief has arrived in Israel after Tel Aviv released documents alleging Iran spied on the IAEA. Iran says Israel, which has refused to join the NPT and is believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, hates the JCPOA and wants to derail the effort to revive it.
The problem with much of what the International Atomic Energy Agency has been doing is that it is trying to find excuses to really, make out that the Iranian nuclear program is a military program. And what one of the problems with the IAEA is they're not looking anywhere near as closely at the Israelis, who do have nuclear weapons. They tried to keep it secret, but Mordecai Vanunu blew the whistle in the Sunday Times here in Britain back in the 1980s and did a massive jail term for his when he was kidnapped, actually, for his trouble. That they do have many nuclear weapons, probably something like 200, they say.
Reports say the United States and its Western allies, pushed by Israel, plan to pile pressure on Iran at the upcoming IAEA meeting. Tehran has warned that it would respond firmly and appropriately to any such move because Tehran has been cooperating based on the agreement reached in March. The fate of months of negotiations between Iran and the P4+1 seems to be at stake as a meeting of the IAEA Board of Governors draws close. Who would benefit from a possible collapse of the talks?
Iran's president has paid a visit to the site of a deadly building collapse in the southwestern city of Abadan. During the unannounced visit, Ebrahim Raisi reviewed and was briefed on the debris removal operation. He also met with the families of some of the victims. Raisi vowed investigations into the incident would continue until all those responsible are brought to justice. An example is made of them for others. The local Red Crescent says the debris removal operation will conclude soon, but not before the last body is pulled from the rubble. Officials have confirmed the death of 37 people so far. The unfinished 10-story Metropole building located on Abadan's busiest street partially crumbled on May the 23rd. Officials blame the building's poor safety and construction standards for the disaster. Israel presses ahead with its settlement expansion on Palestinian land. The regime has reportedly approved construction of 820 new settler units in occupied Al-Quds. Palestinian media said the plan is in two phases. The regime will build 130 units in the first phase and 490 in the second. The new plan comes less than a month after Israel approved 4,400 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. That was the biggest number in settlement construction plans since President Joe Biden took office In the White House, the move met widespread condemnation in Palestine and by the international community. The UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process has urged Israel to halt its settlement activities, saying they are a major obstacle to peace. All the settlements are illegal under international law. Yemenis have filled the streets in the south, or rather northwestern city of Sa'ada, to protest against the continued Saudi-led aggression against their country. Demonstrators chanted slogans against Riyadh. They also chanted death to America, condemning the U.S. for supporting Saudi Arabia in the ongoing war. The conflict began 7 years ago. The U.N. says hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have been killed directly or through indirect causes such as hunger. The world body says that Yemen is now the world's biggest humanitarian crisis. Numerous ceasefires meant to ease civilian sufferings have failed in the past years. The latest truce took effect in April this year, but Yemenis have complained about repeated violations by Saudi Arabia. And Turkey's inflation rate hit 73.5% in May, the highest since 1998. The high inflation is blamed on soaring food and energy prices. Official data showed food prices rose by 91.6% year-on-year in May, while transport climbed by 107.6%. Critics believe the economic crisis is associated with President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's monetary policy of pushing for lower interest rates. Moreover, the currency has lost more than 48% of its value over the past year. The Turkish lira further fell against the dollar on Friday and now stands at 16.49 amid rumors of a military intervention in northern Syria. Well, the war in Ukraine entering its 100th day, with Russian forces now tightening their grip on the eastern Donbass region. The situation is tense in the city of Severodonetsk. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Severodonetsk and nearby communities are the hardest hit. He also says about one-fifth of Ukrainian territory, including Crimea and parts of Donbass seized in 2014, are now under Russian control. Zelensky has called on his Western allies to supply more weapons. Russian forces are fighting Ukrainians in the south as well. At least one person has been killed and several others injured in Russian shelling in the city of Mykolaiv. That's rather according to Ukrainian officials. Our correspondent Johnny Miller joined us earlier from Donetsk province in eastern Ukraine with details on the situation there. Let's take a listen.
President Zelensky said a couple of days ago that between 60 and 100 Ukrainian soldiers are dying every day in the Donbass, which is a staggering number if that's true. Russia, of course, has air and artillery superiority. The Donetsk People's Republic said that they will complete their encirclement of troops around Severodonetsk and Lysychansk in the next 3 days. So it's really troublesome times for the Ukrainian military. I've also heard reports that some Ukrainian soldiers tried to retreat from Severodonetsk, but they're sent back by their commanders to try and make a stand. The Ukrainians have tried to ask NATO, particularly America, for more heavy artillery. That's what they think they need in order to stop the Russian advances. But it's very hard for the Americans to get their heavy weapons even to the front. Russia is hitting railways and weapons depots all over Ukraine. Yesterday they hit a major tunnel in the Lvov district, which is where many of the weapons have been able to get in, a major railway tunnel. So it's very difficult for these weapons to even get to the front. If they do get to the front, they're a target for Russian air and artillery themselves.
U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman says China is challenging Europe's security, economy, and values. Sherman says China's actions matter for the future of Europe. She called on the continent to help the U.S. counter competition from Beijing. The U.S. diplomat also said her country remains vigilant over China's partnership with Russia. She added China will see consequences if it sends military equipment to Russia. Beijing in the past has denied such claims. It has repeatedly called on the U.S. to stop smearing China's domestic and foreign policies. One such call just came last Friday when Beijing hit back at a speech by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He'd accused China of seeking to reshape the world order. Political commentator Andrew Loing says Europe needs to take a cautious approach towards China, considering its trading partnership with Beijing.
Of course, the U.S. wants Europe to be on its side against China. As I said, that there are commonalities as far as values, Western values are concerned. But after all, China is Europe's largest trading partner and is the center of the global supply and value chain. And so Europe does not necessarily want to push the envelope too far, let alone starting a direct war with China. After all, the competition between China and the United States is not military. It's in the field of economics. And China is now the second largest economy in the world, soon to overtake the United States as perhaps the world's largest. So I think that Europe is likely to adopt more nuanced kind of approach.
More people falling victim to gun violence in the U.S., where calls are growing for tighter control on carrying arms. In the latest incident, a man shot dead two women in a parking lot of a church in Iowa. He then turned the gun on himself. In Wisconsin, two people were injured after a man opened fire at a funeral. The shooter is now at large. The Thursday incidents are the latest in a series of shootings that have rocked the U.S. in the past weeks. President Joe Biden has now called on Congress to take action and impose tougher gun control measures. Biden's proposed measures have historically been blocked by Republicans in Congress. Gun safety advocates have pushed the president to take stronger measures on his own to curb gun violence, but the White House wants Congress to pass legislation. Just 2 weeks ago, an 18-year-old opened fire at an elementary school in Texas, killing 21, many of them children. An independent research group called Gun Violence Archive has registered at least 230 mass shootings in the U.S. so far this year. And the British Queen is holding a four-day platinum jubilee to celebrate 70 years on the throne. Thousands of festivities and street parties are planned, but not everyone will attend, with some calling for Britain to get rid of its royals. Many have taken to social media saying that Queen Elizabeth should be the last monarch in the U.K. Hashtag abolish the monarchy has already been trending. On the streets, billboards with the same content have been set up as well. A group calling itself Republic also plans to hold an anti-monarchy conference online on Saturday. That's the third day of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, believed to be costing £15 million. The heavy costs have been a source of discontent among the Brits. That's added to a series of scandals involving the royal family. Member surveys show calls for ditching the monarch is particularly high among younger people. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fundamentals of Imam Khomeini's political thought. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. One of the fundamental principles of Imam Khomeini's thought was to concentrate main issues on the axis of the pure Muhammadan Islam, as the Imam used to call true Islam. The thought rules out secular Islam and backward Islam. He said, Islam is the religion which opens the way toward man's spiritual sublimity through material activities. He also said, genuine Islamic recognition will guide us to the advancement of a society full of human talents and piety and social justice. Imam Khomeini, instead of relying on hollow materialistic powers, seriously relied on God's infinite power, as he believed that God will not leave alone his helpers and the helpers of his religion. The Imam experienced the hardest events with the same thought and belief. He did everything as a religious duty. His jihad in the way of God, his effort for formation of the Islamic rule and thwarting the plots of enemies were all done for God's satisfaction. This does not mean that he didn't pay attention to social and economic affairs of people. Rather, he took everything into consideration, but through putting Islamic laws into practice. Imam Khomeini deeply believed in people's power. He considered all walks of life like himself, and this was the reason why the entire nation loved and supported him. The idea of republicanism was based on this very thought, as the Imam strongly believed that the system belongs to the people. In view of this, he kept recommending officials that they are the servants of people rather than their bosses. Imam Khomeini considered support for the poor parallel with social justice and a struggle against injustice and corruption. In view of this, among his main ideals were to materialize social justice, minimize class gap, remove unjust discriminations, support the poor, and fight poverty. Imam Khomeini paid high attention to struggle against oppression and global arrogance. The thought had its roots in the Quran and Islamic narrations. He would stand against any tyrant and oppressor both in social and political fields. Accordingly, he staged uprising against the tyrannical regime of Muhammad Reza Pahlavi and overthrew it with God's favor and people's support. He also stood courageously against the U.S., calling it as the Great Satan. The Imam was the first one who said, America cannot do a damn thing. This has turned into the slogan of anyone who struggles against the U.S. Imam Khomeini turned the issue of fighting the fabricated Zionist regime and supporting the Palestinian nation into the main issue of the Islamic world. Imam Khomeini was the main caller to and banner bearer of unity. He believed that unity should be observed among all Islamic denominations and ethnic groups. According to the Quranic principle, the Imam maintained that no one is superior to others except for God-weariness. Today, the enemies of Islam, enjoying media empire, is doing its best to sow seeds of differences in a bid to weaken the Islamic Ummah and make various Islamic denominations suspicious of each other. This is aimed at misleading minds and thoughts from the main enemy, the US, and the fabricated regime of Israel. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was a true believer in independence. It means negation of all kinds of dependence, particularly on enemies. However, independence does not mean negation of interaction and communication with others. What is important as a principle in Islam is to negate dominance of foreigners and enemies on Muslims. This is against dignity and freedom of Islamic communities. One of the clear manifestations of independence in Imam Khomeini's thought was his special attitude toward relations with the US. From the beginning of his struggle against the Pahlavi tyranny, the Imam made it clear that the United States is the main cause of the Shah treachery and crimes against the Iranian people and the world. Therefore, he adopted an independent and uncompromising stance against Washington. Permanent struggle against the arrogant in the world, especially the US, and support for the oppressed and downtrodden was the infrastructure of Imam Khomeini's political ideology. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the American leaders have conspired incessantly to restrain this revolution or isolate it to defeat it. This, however, has not escaped Imam Khomeini's sharp look, as the US has failed in all of its plots. Imam Khomeini called the US, the government and not the people of the US, as the criminal of history, source of corruption, great Satan, world devourer, spiteful enemy of the world, oppressed, number one enemy of mankind, enemy of Islam and the international looter. Imam Khomeini called relation with the US as the relation of wolf and lamb. He said that the superpowers want to milk us and there is no benefit in relation with them.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches!
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Once again, the combination of semi-automatic assault rifles and racism has led to a catastrophe in the United States, this time in Buffalo, New York. An 18-year-old armed boy opened fire at a neighborhood grocery store, managing to shoot 13 people dead. The victims, mostly people of color, were going about their daily business at the store, unbeknown of a racist predator entering the premises from outside the community. Identified as Peyton S. Gendron, the shooter, who was reportedly carrying a Nazi-associated symbol known as a Black Sun, live-streamed the graphic scenes of the deadly shooting on Twitch for his white supremacist supporters to enjoy.
Racism and guns.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And in today's episode, we'll take a look at the horrendous shooting in New York. Who is to blame and what must be done to prevent such atrocities? The shooter, who was wearing a military-style fatigues and had ostensibly racist incentives, he was carrying a black Bushmaster XM-15 assault rifle with the N-word emblazoned on the barrel. He had also written other racist messages all over the weapon used in this crime. Other messages visible on the rifle reportedly said, "Here are your reparations." Other racist mass shooters, namely Dylan Roof, John Ernest, as well as Sigaon, meaning "Stop your genocide against our white nation." The killer made sure that his senseless and horrific mass shooting has all the elements of a racist hate crime. Our first guest in this episode will be Ben Norton, journalist and commentator based out of Latin America, who is founder and editor at the independent news website Multipolarista. And later in the show, we'll be joined by Benjamin G. Davis, professor of law at the University of Toledo. Please stay with us.
The murderer had indeed premeditated harassing and threatening people of color prior to the high-profile crime at the Tops Friendly Market store, a supermarket in the Kingsley neighborhood. After entering the supermarket, the 18-year-old managed to slaughter 10 people, most of whom were black, and injure 3 others. The ferocity of the killing was seen by many of his followers online, and the video was captured to remain online forever.
Now, although search engines and streaming services immediately brought down the video, it will be there in the dark web to inspire upcoming mass shooters, an ominous mixture of tech, xenophobia, and rifles. So is hatred against African Americans, Muslims, Latinos, and Jewish people rising in America? And how can it be addressed to prevent mass shootings such as this recent one, sir?
Well, I looked up the FBI hate crime statistics, and I think that they said for last year there were about 8,000 what they called hate crime that occurred with these kind of biases in them. And that was an increase of, I believe, 11% since the year before. So I would say that it seems that this kind of hate crime violence is increasing in the United States.
So we have to ask, why are guns so easily accessible to the youth? When it comes to gun policy in America, the elephant in the room is the ease of access to firearms by terrorists planning to traumatize vulnerable communities inside the United States. Efforts for stricter gun laws and background checks have been hampered by pro-gun lobbies, most notably the National Rifle Association, the NRA. So is it safe to say that the NRA is profiting from white supremacy?
There definitely is a rise in hate crimes in the United States against black people, against Latinos, and also against Asians, against East Asians. And a lot of this is related to the rise of far-right extremism and white supremacist groups. It's also related to U.S. foreign policy, especially the demonization of China has led to hate crimes against Chinese people. And in the case of the horrific massacre in Buffalo, we know that the shooter was an avowed white supremacist and a fascist. And this kind of far-right extremist ideology is on the rise in the United States. And basically, the U.S. government has helped play a role in cultivating this. And we see that one of the main political parties, the Republican Party, is extremely right-wing. And there are even members of the Republican Party who are white nationalists and who have promoted these white supremacist ideas that have helped to create more and more violence and extremism. So we need to understand that the violence and extremism and terrorism inside the United States doesn't just emerge out of nowhere. It is a direct product of the political class, the political culture in the U.S., which is very xenophobic, very pro-war, and very racist.
The NRA is extremely powerful in shaping gun policies, although the so-called gun rights advocacy group has no more than 5 million members across the United States. For more than 130 years, the NRA's policy has been simple, yet destructive, selling more and more guns, apparently regardless of its costs for the communities. What are the most salient aspects of the latest shooting in terms of hate and its rise in the United States?
There's steadily been a decrease in white animosity towards these other groups, I think, over the 60 years of my life. But there has been an uptick in certain kinds of animosity that's been pushed, particularly towards Muslims, since 9/11. And it's unfortunate. But there is, I think, a significant decrease in the number of persons who hold those animosities. My gut feeling would be maybe 30%, 40% of white Americans. There are some Black Americans hold those animosities, the problem is that that's two out of the five people you run into on any given day.
Shootings are a daily reality in the U.S., claiming the lives of innocent victims and harming communities. Yet mass shootings that are hate-driven occur every now and then, mostly targeting minorities such as the people of color in America. The killer in the latest case was an extremist white supremacist who released a manifesto of his beliefs online before embarking on the atrocity.
Those kinds of people who would egg on this kind of violence and think it is something to support are sick individuals who will ultimately end up being prosecuted if they attempt to do anything remotely like what this guy has tried to do. So the racist memes are something that are unfortunate. What is unfortunate is that the use of those memes, along with people having power of some kind over other people.
Now, the shooter was mostly motivated by the so-called great replacement theory, the idea that people of color have to be stopped before they fully replace white people in America. Now, while the suspect is now held in custody, his bold act of violence will be there to inspire the upcoming cabal of racists and white supremacists. Considering the rudely racist memes about Black Americans in the shooter's manifesto, how could racism and hate affect power in America in the near future?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many racist memes, you know, that the person can put in their 180-page manifesto. You know, you can just copy all kinds of stuff from anywhere. You probably do a Google search and you can come up with a bunch of them and do that. So, you know, there's all kinds of racist memes that are out there. But that's just one aberrant, bizarre individual's kind of feeding themselves on this hate and thinking that they would be rewarded in some sense for killing Black people. Well, it's just insanity. They're not insane. It's just it's insanity.
The latest mass shooting in America is a telltale of all that is broken in the country. The divide in the nation is picking along with hate for the other side. The country's gun laws remain broken, facilitating an 18-year-old's easy access to legal purchase of a semi-automatic assault rifle, and racism run rampant. An increasing number of young white males are being radicalized on social media, and some decide to take revenge on immigrants, Muslims, African Americans, Latinos, etc.
We need to understand that the shooter in Buffalo is an avowed fascist. He's not just a crazy lone gunman, as the narrative often says in the media. He wrote a manifesto that makes it clear that he calls himself a fascist. He calls himself a white supremacist. He is motivated by a far-right fascist ideology. And ironically, he uses some of the same white supremacist symbols that are used by fascist groups in Ukraine who are backed by NATO. So just as the U.S. government spent years supporting far-right extremist Salafi jihadist groups, Takfiri groups, that carried out terrorist attacks like so-called ISIS or Al-Qaeda. We know that the U.S. government had a long history of supporting these groups in Afghanistan in the 1980s, against Syria, against Iran, against Libya in 2011. And then those same groups carry out terrorist attacks in the West.
Racism in America has indeed caused problems in the country since its nascent days, but coupled with all the issues the U.S. is facing today, it could cause vicious scenes of violence involving death and destruction and injury of innocent people. Where is white supremacy heading in America today, coupled with mass shootings, sometimes involving heavily armed shooters?
Unfortunately, I think the reality is that this violence is going to keep getting worse in the United States. We've seen it get worse and worse over the years. I mentioned that there are now a lot of paramilitary groups in the United States. That is, there are armed gangs, militias, and many of them are far right. They have white supremacist ideology, and they are motivated to basically kill people who disagree with them. And it's very similar to what the United States has done around the world. If the U.S. wants to destabilize a foreign country, as it did in Ukraine in the 2014 coup, the U.S., the CIA, and other U.S. intelligence agencies will sometimes support some of these extremist groups by sending them weapons, by training them. This is also what the U.S. did in Syria, and this is what the U.S. did in Libya. And this same strategy of supporting extremist groups to destabilize the country is also now what's happening inside the United States. But the difference is that it's not a foreign power supporting these extremist white supremacist militias. It's instead local elites.
The so-called right to keep and bear arms, which was initially put in place to guarantee the safety of people, has now turned into a major issue, with authorities making efforts to stop similar shootings by prying into American citizens' lives on the pretext of providing security. The NRA does not even bother to sympathize with victims of such shootings, instead promoting its pro-gun agenda and, of course, profit reaped from sale of deadly arms to citizens.
With regards to guns in the United States, there's the Second Amendment that has been found by the Supreme Court to be a personal right that we have. So barring any change to the Constitution, there's really no solution with regards to guns to reduce the availability of guns. It just has not been very successful. I mean, the most interesting idea I thought of was not so much on guns, but it was on bullets. You know, that you can have a gun, but you know, a bullet would cost you $1,000. That might be a way to discourage people from actually shooting people.
America needs to take on the powerful gun lobby, at least to ensure that psychopaths do not get access to guns, which can be used to kill a relatively large number of citizens in a matter of minutes. Considering the fact that Peyton S. Gendron bought weapons legally to shoot unarmed people, what are the prospects of a better gun control in the U.S., since guns are used to promote violence and victimize minorities?
Well, the reality is that gun control is very difficult in the United States because it's a very partisan issue. And specifically, there is a large lobby that of large corporations that have pushed against the possibility of any legislation to pass gun control. So in the U.S., basically, in many states, it's legal to have your own personal arsenal with very heavy weaponry, a kind of militia. And across the United States, we actually do see militias, paramilitary groups. There are thousands of armed groups, and many of those armed groups in the United States are white supremacists and far-right groups. And sometimes they actually have support from local governments.
Racism and hate against minorities run deep in U.S. society and the government, with no systemic effort to tackle it from powerful politicians. White supremacy is a true danger, imperiling the lives of all minorities in America.
We see that one of the main political parties, the Republican Party, is extremely right-wing, and there are even members of the Republican Party who are white nationalists and who have promoted these white supremacist ideas that have helped to create more and more violence and extremism. So we need to understand that the violence and extremism and terrorism inside the United States doesn't just emerge out of nowhere. It is a direct product of the political class, the political culture in the U.S., which is very xenophobic, very pro-war, and very racist.
Every now and then, a rather high-profile mass shooting brings attention to the situation, yet no practical steps are taken to cure the disease. Racist mass shooters often follow tenets of conservative figures such as former President Donald Trump, who has been stoking hatred against Hispanic people, African Americans, and Muslims, among others. How deep is racism in roots in America and the prevalence of ideas such as the Great Replacement Theory, which led to such deadly scenes recently?
The thing is that there are people who find it profitable to put forward lies and to, in order to get power, to get money, to get success. For example, I think it was in the primaries in Pennsylvania, the very reputable Philadelphia Inquirer asked all three of the Republican candidates who won the 2020 election. None of them would admit that Joe Biden had won the 2020 election. As a consequence, they were not able to recommend somebody or endorse someone for voting because simply, you know, the basic facts people were just unwilling to even admit because it's not profitable to them.
The racist shooting rampage is definitely not the last one we'll see in the U.S., but the question is, how many more lives need to be lost before U.S. politicians get serious in tackling a combination of white supremacy and teens with mental illnesses getting access to very deadly weapons?
Well, I think that white supremacist types are a minority of white people in the United States, but steadily declining, I think, personally, over the 60 years of my life. So in a country that is like the United States, the future is basically that it's going to die out. There's going to always be these efforts to regenerate it because it is profitable in the United States for some to raise these positions and argue these positions. But at the same time, I think that there are plenty of people of goodwill, whatever their color.
In the meanwhile, the victims and their families, their communities, are the ones having to pay the price. Let us pray for them and hope that the situation improves as soon as possible. And now it's time we check in with Abbas Montarim. The title of his speech is Buffalo Massacre Shows That Fascism Is Here.
Peace, and welcome back to Power to the People. On this segment, we're going to talk about the white supremacist neo-Nazi attack in Buffalo, New York. On Saturday, May 14th, 2022, an 18-year-old white nationalist neo-Nazi drove hours to a black neighborhood, walked into a grocery store, and opened fire on a crowd with his assault rifle. He live-streamed this attack with the N-word written on his rifle, and he brutally murdered and executed 10 black people. This type of white supremacist, neo-Nazi terrorism is nothing new. It's inherent to this genocidal settler colony known as America. And history gives us all types of examples of this type of violence. Whether it was the Memphis Massacre in 1866, which left 46 black people dead, or in 2015, when Dylann Roof walked into a black church and murdered 9 people, or back in 1963, when the KKK planted 19 sticks of dynamite and bombed a black church, killing 4 little black girls. And these white supremacists, they have even destroyed whole towns. As in 1921, white supremacists destroyed Tulsa, Oklahoma, killing more than 300 black people. And we could literally go on and on about the genocidal attacks on black communities. But one thing we must understand is that from this neo-Nazi attack is that fascism is literally here, and that both the Democrats and Republicans are responsible for this. So no, it isn't just about gun control, and it's not about mental health. This is about neo-Nazi, white supremacist, fascist violence. Yet these Democrats, they will condone this attack as if their party isn't responsible for white supremacy and fascism as well. Joe Biden recently gave a speech and he said white supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through our body politic. Well, I hate to break it to you, Joe, but you yourself are the poison that you are referring to. Biden himself is pro-police. He has given billions to police departments, even after high-profile killings. If that ain't fascism, I don't know what is. And his government has also supported the neo-Nazi Azov Battalion in Ukraine, supplying weapons as well as military aid and logistics. And Biden has also given him $40 billion, $40 billion to Ukraine. But one might think that it isn't related, but stay with me for a second. This Buffalo terrorist, he was inspired by the Christchurch mosque shootings, and the man responsible for that terrorist attack that murdered innocent Muslims, he was inspired by none other than the racist neo-Nazi Azov Battalion, and was praised by the Azov Battalion as a hero. And he used the same Sun Nazi symbol that the Azov Battalion uses. And it's also been reported that the Azov Battalion helped distribute the Christchurch Shooters Manifesto. What does this have to do with Buffalo? Well, the Buffalo shooter, he was literally inspired by the Christchurch shooter. And he donned the same white supremacist symbol that not only the Azov Battalion uses, but also the one that the Christchurch shooter has used. This shows us that this white supremacist neo-Nazi ideology is international, and it can't simply just be blamed on anti-black American racism. Rather, it's a combination of racism, capitalism, and imperialism, which creates fascism, which is literally what we are living in. And the sad part about this all is that these attacks will continue until we rise up and smash fascism, and we must build a united front to stop this capitalist, imperialist, and racist violence. That will undoubtedly take some time to develop. And in the meantime, it's important that we defend ourselves from this white supremacist, neo-Nazi violence. As El Hajj Malik El Shabazz said, preserve your life. It's the best thing that you got. And I want to end this segment with a quote from none other than George Jackson. He said, settle your quarrels. Come together. Understand the reality of our situation. Understand that fascism is already here. That people are already dying who could be saved. That generations more will live poor, butchered, half lives if you fail to act. Do what must be done. Discover your humanity and your love and revolution. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And do make sure you tune in next week when we come back with another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.